All right, good morning. How's everyone doing? Nice. We are at week four, believe it or not, already in our Slow Church series. And I hope everyone has a book. We have a few extra books that we got that are on the back table. If you want to follow along with us, we're in this about 11, 12-week series. And we're asking the question, what does it mean to be a church? And what are the principles that Awaken is founded upon? In order to help us do that, we're using the book Slow Church. Now, I gave an assignment last week, which we will get to in a little bit. But first, let's talk a bit about patience. A topic everyone loves to talk about, right?
Oh, gosh.
Almost ripped my ear off. So let's talk a bit about patience here this morning. Let's go to the next slide. We all know this verse. Galatians chapter 5. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience. Other translations will say forbearance. Most of you probably don't use that word forbearance when you're talking about patience. Fruits of the Spirit, love, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things, there's no law. There's no law against patience. So why do we struggle with patience? Anyone else? You have a hard time with patience? All right. So a few of us here, a few honest people here, right? We'll go to the next slide. So I think patience is really hard to find in our culture. Anyone else agree with this? We don't live in a culture of patience. What we live in is a culture of speed, efficiency, productivity, ease, we could say comfort, and a culture of yesterday. We want things done when? Yesterday. We want to have arrived at a particular place in our journey when? Yesterday. We don't want to have to keep waiting for it. It's like when you're a little kid and you're waiting for Christmas. How many more days? How many more days? Or the question that I get asked all the time when we're in the car. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? As adults, we just ask the question a little differently, or we exhibit that in a very different way. But essentially, much of life, unfortunately, seems to be about waiting to get here, waiting for this to happen, waiting for a certain event to come up. And you know what doesn't really help us with this? I forget if I have a slide or not. Let's see. Oh, so I've been spending a lot of time at Home Depot, and I've noticed this is their slogan, how doers get more done. Anyone else find the irony in this? How doers get more done. If you come to Home Depot, well, then you are a doer. You are someone who goes and goes and goes, and you get stuff done. You don't wait around. You take action on things. But again, what's this all about? It's presenting a message about productivity and efficiency. And if you shop here, you're going to get way more done, and you are going to be an accomplished person. You're not going to be sitting around because you are going to be working. Now, what doesn't help with patience and the lack of patience in our culture is this thing right here. In fact, this brings us in the very opposite direction most of the time. Anyone else, you get a screen report at the end of your week, and it tells you how much screen time you have, and it tells you whether you're up, whether you're down. Sometimes I see that I'm up, and I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm up that much from last week. The thing about the cell phone, it provides ease. It provides comfort. You can basically run your whole life from this thing. Someone gives you a check. All you got to do is snap a picture. You don't have to go to the bank anymore. I mentioned earlier about donating. You can just hop on this and you can just Venmo someone money nowadays. You don't have to write them a check. You can just quickly press a couple of buttons and instantaneously they're given the money that you owe them. What about maps? How many of you use a Rand McNally? I know Ted does. Anyone besides Ted use a Rand McNally? No. What you do is you plug your address in and it tells you exactly how to get there. You listen to that voice, wherever that voice tells you to go. You don't really question it. And yet year after year, people unfortunately end up making right-hand turns or left-hand turns onto train tracks because you're just blindly following this voice wherever it's telling you to go because, well, this thing must be right. It's about comfort, about efficiency. This is going to give me the best. I mean, traffic, thing of the past. I was driving, I dropped Steph off at the airport last week, and I was following my GPS back because I needed to get back to pick my son up before school ended. And it said, we have found a new route for you. This shaves 4 minutes off your time, except I need to get there. It's all about speed and going and going. And when things don't work as quickly as our cell phone works for us, we get annoyed. We get frustrated because this thing, much of the time, it works great. So the internet is disconnected at my house. Someone cut a wire, I guess, with all the work that they're doing. I go to my house, and even when I'm on my 5G, I don't get any service. So I can't get any internet. I can't download mail. I can't send pictures. I've been trying to FaceTime Steph, and we're trying to make decisions about the house. My FaceTime doesn't work. And multiple contractors have commented on this, like, the service around here is terrible. Anyone remember the old dial-up? Could you imagine waiting for dial-up these days? What happens when you go in a dead spot like my house, and you have no service, and you're scrolling down trying to refresh the feed, but all you see is that circle that just keeps on spinning, saying, it's working, it's working, it's working. You get annoyed. And 3G isn't fast enough, so now we need to have 5G. 5 years from now, what do you think they're going to have? 5G is not going to be fast enough. So we're going to need 6. We live in a culture of speed, and the speed that worked for us yesterday or last year no longer works today. It's all about going faster and faster, and as Home Depot tells us, it's about getting more done. Technology was supposed to make our lives easier, and in some ways it has. You throw your dishes into the dishwasher, and you hit a couple of buttons, you put some soap in there, the next morning the dishes are clean. Great. Love it. You can deposit checks. You don't need to carry a map around. Awesome. I love it. Someone says, hey, meet me here. I can plug it right in. I don't have to go to the gas station to try to find a map. So in some ways, yes, technology has made our lives a whole lot easier. But in other ways, it's just fed into this culture of speed that we all exist in, about having things done now. Yeah, all right. I don't even know what to say. 50th happy birthday. Yeah, I guess the prizes are starting to float down. We can go to the next slide. So here's the problem with speed. Is that you're constantly after more. The problem with speed is that, well, there's more to do. There's more that we can get done in this 30-minute block. And what happens is when you have certain ways of things that are very efficient for you, well, now you begin to view all of life through that lens. So when you can instantaneously find out how old Brad Pitt is or when his birthday is, well, now we begin to view all of life from that perspective. And we think, well, I should just be able to Google it. You remember when you used to go hang out with your friends and someone had a question, you're like, oh, I remember this place or this movie. And then you would go home and you would think about it. And then you would call the person, or the next time you saw them, you would tell them, hey, here's the movie that we were talking about that neither of us could figure out what in the world the name of the movie was. Now all you have to do is Google it. When you can Google something, or when, as Joe said, there's an app for it and you can get things done right away, immediately, well, then all of life now begins to be viewed as, well, this should be done now. This should be done immediately. And anything that goes contrary to that belief is just plain wrong. And you know what this plays into? We can go to the next slide. We'll get there in a minute. But this plays into our spiritual life as well and our journey with God. When the surrounding culture is one of speed, efficiency, productivity, we now begin to view our spiritual lives through that lens as well. And we believe we need to be here. I need to have arrived at this place. I need to have matured in my faith as much as she has or he has. It goes back to that whole culture of comparing or thinking, man, I should have kicked that habit a long, long time ago. Why is it still here? You ever have something in your life and you just wish it wasn't true about you? And it keeps popping up at all of the worst times. And you think you just beat yourself up over it. And you think, oh my gosh, this habit, this behavior, I thought I got rid of it. Why is it still here? Why do I still have this mindset? Why is this belief that I'm holding in my head? It should be gone. I'm a Christian. I'm a follower of Jesus. I go to church. I read my Bible. I do all the things that the Bible tells me to do. Must be me. All right, let's try that. So here, let's go back 2,000 years ago to when Jesus walked the earth. And here's Matthew chapter 16. And Jesus is talking with his disciples. And he's telling him where his life is leading. So it says, from the time Jesus began to explain that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. So he's trying to explain this. Imagine trying to explain this to people. Hey, listen, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. It's not going to end well. I'm going to be killed, but hey, don't worry about it. I'm going to be resurrected. Your first thought isn't like, oh yeah, okay, because we see this all the time. No, of course you're going to be, whoa, wait, hold on a second. First, if you know you're going to be killed, let's just go the other way. Like, why are we going to Jerusalem? So Peter took him aside. Peter, the faithful servant, he took him aside and he's like, hey, Jesus, can we talk for a minute? Like, there's some things that we have to talk about here because this, it's not making a whole lot of sense. And Peter began to rebuke Jesus. Of course that's going to go well, right? Start rebuking Jesus. Never, Lord. This shall never happen to you. I will, on my watch, I'm not going to let this happen. I will not let them kill you. Let's hightail it out of here. And so Jesus turned, he said, get behind me, Satan. You are a stumbling block to me. You do not have in mind the concerns of God, but merely human concerns. How often are we like Peter in our lives? God, listen. Like, we have this conversation, we play it out in our head, maybe we say it out loud, we stare up in the sky. God, here's the deal. Let me tell you how it's going to work, okay? And you offer this prayer, kind of laying out your plans to God, and then things don't really go that way. And what happens? We get upset with God. We get disappointed with God. We begin to feel like God's let us down. And that's a normal human response. And I'm sure many, if not all of us, have been there before. We go through moments in life. We go through seasons in life where we are frustrated. We're like Peter. And we're like, Jesus, what, this isn't how it's supposed to go. I'm following you. I'm devoting my life to you. Everything is supposed to work out the way in which I expected, the way in which I planned. And it's supposed to happen in my timing, not your timing or not the way in which you are beginning to orchestrate things. But it's supposed to happen without any pain, without any suffering. I mean, here's Jesus saying, hey, the way to resurrection, the way to bring new life to all people and to creation is to actually go through a time of suffering. And Peter's like, no, it doesn't work that way. I mean, fast forward 2,000 years and we're still believing the same. If we go through a time of suffering or a time when things don't work out, well, we begin to think that something's wrong. Have you ever looked around at someone else's life and, man, what have they done wrong to deserve that? Or you look at your own life and you begin to ask, man, what have I done wrong? You begin to question, okay, what have I sinned? Did I make a bad decision? Is God angry with me? Is that why I'm going through this period in life? And yet what we find here, the truth found in Matthew, in this scripture right here, is that the way to resurrection, it often comes through suffering. It comes through pain. It comes through having all of your expectations blown up. You had that 5-year plan. You're a year into it, And now all of a sudden, that dream that you had is no longer a possibility. The thing that you were holding in your hands, the thing that you thought made the most sense, and of course God's going to give this to me, it's not there anymore. And now we're beginning to pull Jesus aside and say, hey, what the, it's not, this isn't, no, it doesn't work this way. If we go to the next slide. See, oftentimes in life, we think that it's all about the destination. And we forget that it's actually the journey that is more important than the destination. The journey of becoming like Christ, if we go back to what our mission here at Awaken, it's becoming, creating followers of Jesus. That's a journey. It takes a lifetime, and it's never perfected. If I had to guess, you watch movies or TV shows or you read books, not because you want to read that final page. Otherwise, you read the first page, read the last page, figure out how the whole thing works itself out, then you'd put that book down and you come to the next one. Or you would fast forward through a movie, you go to the last scene, oh great, everything worked out beautifully, awesome, next movie. No, you watch these movies because of the journey. You want to know, how did the ending come to happen? What's the path that these main characters took? I love The Hobbit. It's also known as There and Back Again. And when Bilbo returns back to the Shire, there's this line where he's looking at the Shire after he's gone through this journey. He's done everything. He's had all these different adventures. And now he's looking on the Shire as he's about to return home. And it says he is approaching the last... And then in parentheses, or the first house. So on his way out, it was the last house that he passed. On the way in, now it's the first house again, because his whole perspective has changed. He's been through a journey. He's a changed person. The journey that you're on is changing you. It's transforming you. And the question, the invitation that's always being offered to us is, are we opening our hearts to the journey that's before us? Unfortunately, we don't often get to pick the journey. Obstacles, challenges, they just come our way. Now, there's some choices, obviously, that we make that present different challenges along the way, and we have a choice in that matter. But so many things in life are just thrown our way, and we have absolutely no choice as to whether or not we are going to accept them. We just need to walk through them. And so how do we keep our hearts soft? How do we remain patient in the midst of a difficult situation? How do we not look around at the culture of speed and how where everyone else is? And how do we actually be patient in the midst of that which is immediately in front of us, even if it's a painful, difficult season in life? If we go to the next slide, and I think, so here, okay. I think this is really important for us to remember, is that who you're becoming is more important than reaching a final destination. This is the question that I often ask myself. Okay, who am I becoming as a person? What's the direction that I'm walking in? How am I being changed? Because I'm not a perfect person. You're not a perfect person. Hate to burst your bubble, but I'm just going to let you know right now, none of us are perfect people. We all have our individual struggles. We all have that thing that keeps tripping us up. And we get so upset at ourselves. And we beat ourselves up over it. We don't give ourselves grace. We all have our individual challenges. It's what makes you unique. But that's also what unites us. It's our imperfection that unites us together. And it's okay. It's okay. God's still with you. God still loves you. God is still at work in you. And your imperfections, your flaws, your failures, they're there. But grace covers it. And you're being changed. You're being transformed as you take it one step at a time. I think we have a video right now, and I mentioned this clip a couple weeks back, but I want to play it because this is one of the most profound video clips from Evan Almighty or from any movie that you will ever see. And we come upon this scene where Morgan Freeman plays God because he has the best God voice. I mean, come on, can we all just agree that God definitely sounds like Morgan Freeman? And we have the wife of Evan, or the modern day Noah.
Oh, excuse me, can I get a refill, please?
Coming right up. Excuse me, are you all right?
Yeah. No, it's a long story.
But I like stories. I'm considered a bit of a storyteller myself.
My husband, you heard of New York's Noah?
The guy who's building the ark.
That's him.
I love that story. Knowing the ark. You know, a lot of people miss the point of that story. They think it's about God's wrath and anger. They love it when God gets angry.
What is the story about then, the ark?
Well, I think it's a love story about believing in each other. You know, the animals showed up in pairs. They stood by each other, side by side, just like Noah and his family. Everybody entered the ark side by side.
But my husband says God told him to do it. What do you do with that?
Sounds like an opportunity. Let me ask you something. If someone prays for patience, you think God gives them patience? Or does he give them the opportunity to be patient? If they pray for courage, does God give them courage? Or does he give them opportunity to be courageous? If someone prayed for the family to be closer, do you think God zaps them with warm, fuzzy feelings? Or does he give them opportunities to love each other? I got one. A lot of people to serve. Enjoy.
It's great, right? How often do we pray something and then, again, we expect it to happen right there and then? I mean, I'm guilty of those prayers. And when God doesn't answer that prayer how we want, immediately, we become impatient. Oh, God, it's not supposed to be this way. And yet here, I love that. Hey, if you pray for patience, God gives opportunities. What if your imperfections, what if the fact that you're not at the place where you want to be at is an opportunity for you to understand grace in deeper ways? We don't like grace. Because grace means that it's out of our control. We like things that we can control. We like those apps. We like having our phone because it makes us feel like we're in control. You ever leave your house without your phone? And you're like, whoa, my goodness, what's going on with my life? Here's the deal. You did it 20 years ago and you were fine. You're all still here. But yet nowadays, we leave without our phone. It's like, I feel lost. I can't do it. Yeah, what if it's an opportunity to learn grace, and that grace is something beyond ourselves, and that it is freely given by God? And as we learn to accept ourselves, and as we offer grace to ourselves, we're now then able to offer grace to others. So if we can go, here we go. Yeah, one of the things I love about the fruits of the Spirit is that fruits of the Spirit, you pray for them, it's something that is given by the Spirit. Notice, fruit of the Spirit. Not fruit of your humanity, but fruit of the Spirit. It's something like grace that is freely given. And then we can go to the next slide. So what are the opportunities? What are the opportunities that are being presented to you right now? What are the opportunities before you to learn and discover patience? What are the opportunities that are transforming you in your life? And I love it. It mentions in the book that one of the ideas about patience is that it teaches us long-suffering, compassion. Because as we learn patience for ourselves, we're then able to offer the same to other people. So as we can accept grace and trust grace for ourselves, we're now able to sit with others in their suffering and in the times of need that they have. So let's do this. So we'll do one more slide and then we'll do the other thing I was saying. Here's what I've come to discover about people who live by patience. They live in a very different way than many of the people I run across in my life. People who are patient people are people who are shaped by a different system. They're people of simplicity. People who aren't rushed, they're kind of at peace with themselves and with the world. There's this calmness that they exude. They're not overburdened because they have come to discover this is enough. This is what I can carry. And they're not trying to carry too much in their life. They're not trying to carry other people's stuff or what other people have handed them. They have focus, they have compassion, and they have time. See, when I thought about patience, I tried to think about the people in my life who have patience. And these are the qualities that I see in such people. And these are the qualities that I want in my life. And when I'm not living this way, when I'm overextending myself or when I'm feeling frantic and when I'm rushed, I'm realizing, okay, there's a way that I'm not living at peace. I'm not being patient with myself and where I find myself. So let's talk a bit about patience, and then I also want to talk about, but we don't really have that much time. So let's just talk about patience, and we'll just take it from there. So any questions, anything that the chapter, or any ideas, any thoughts that we had from reading or looking at patience for this week?
I just have a hard time linking the patience to the compassion. Me personally, I think that I'm a super impatient person, but that I'm very compassionate. So I had a hard time getting through that chapter and making that link.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can be both. Again, it's not about perfection and it's not about an either or. I think sometimes, and you know, maybe the chapter made it seem kind of like you are either patient and compassionate or you're impatient and non-compassionate. And I don't think that you know, I wouldn't make that either or, that you don't have it if you don't have the other. You know, so I think sometimes things become very black and white, but the truth is life is a lot messier than that. And you can't just define one category in one way and then just discredit everything else. So I would give yourself grace there, and you can just write it off, forget about it. I mean, I know you're a compassionate person. So I would just write that one off. And I think that's the thing about any book, anything, right? I mean, there's things in there that you can grab hold of, and there's things you're like, hey, that's just not for me. And I think that's the discerning spirit, to know what's not for you and not to feel guilt over anything that was, you know, written.
One of the things I understand the patience part of it, and I try to practice that like everybody else. But the other part of it is you always feel like that production. Like, am I doing enough? Let me take it even from a spiritual spot. Am I being a good steward with all the skills that God's giving me? Am I putting too much on God because he's equipped me to do certain things in my life? You know, you can fall, you know, it's sort of like, that's why you're always in prayer, is trying to figure out the difference of, you know, where it is. There's definitely so many different prophets that have taken a break and rested, you know, and said, all right, I'm going to turn it, you know, over there. And, but it's always, there's also that fine line of like, and maybe in our society, we have just so much of like, you know, that Protestant work ethic that's been embedded into us that says, okay, we need to do enough. And then as I talk, I know I've had this other thought in my head of like, that I've been using recently, of pushing rope, of sometimes trying to make things happen when they're impossible to happen under my power.
Yeah, I think I've said this before. You know, for me, one of the things that really helps me with that is this heavy-light distinction. And oftentimes, if you're feeling really heavy, and it's just a feeling that you have, right? I mean, like, you feel heavy in your soul, you feel heavy in your spirit, then you've taken on too much. You're trying to do too much. It's all about, like, I want to feel that lightness, and that's what I'm going for. is how do I feel light? And, you know, if I'm feeling way too heavy and overburdened, then I'm taking on more than what I should be carrying. And I think it changes seasonally too. One of the things that's helped me is, like, you know, quarterly I'll kind of take a look and evaluate, okay, what are the next couple of months going to bring? And, you know, we try as a family to take a look at it and say, okay, hey, what are we doing over the next couple of months? What feels okay for us and what feels too heavy? And sometimes you go through a crazy season and you have to take on more just because that's the reality of what life brings your way. And of course, there's going to be seasons. That's why someone once said that life balance is, forget about it, from week to week. There's no way you can achieve life balance from week to week. But can you achieve life balance within a year? So maybe you go, 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 because you just kind of have to get something done for a particular season, whether it's a month, 2 months, whatever it is. And then you have a month or two where it's more filled with rest. And I think that's more in line with, because you can't totally remove yourself from the culture. There's just no way you can do that. You know, you can't, I guess you could go walled in it and go build a cabin and live way, way out in the woods by yourself. But for most of us, that's just not sustainable. So you have to exist within the culture. So it's always, for me, the heavy light feeling and looking at things seasonally. And I would say one more thing, Carl. The other question always to ask is, do you create space for Sabbath? Because that, for me, that resets me every single week, where I take that day and it's no screens and no work. I don't pop my computer open. And right now, I don't have that space in my life because of what's going on with our house right now. And I feel it, and I really miss it. So I try to carve it out just a couple of hours, you know, because, again, it's the reality. Sometimes you just don't have it, but you need to find that time where you can just rest and where you can simply be. And no one's expecting anything of you. And I think, for me, that has been a practice that has tremendously helped me.
I picked up something from the author. I think I have the link between patience and what was the other one? Patience and compassion. The author was saying that in the olden times, they didn't define the word patient as we do today. They defined it as forbearance, long-suffering, which means something different, not really waiting, right? And compassion means to suffer along with. These days, we think of compassion as like, okay, feeling sorry for somebody. You know, if you see someone hurting, you know, you give them a Band-Aid, or if they don't have food to eat, you give them some money or some food. That's not really what it means, what they meant by compassion. They meant to suffer along with, really to get to know that person, understand what they're feeling, and, you know, like, give them that sympathy. And, you know, Jesus, he told us it's not going to be easy to be a Christian. You know, we're going to have to pick up our crosses and follow him, right? So I think a lot of times, you know, we feel like that, and, you know, we have to understand those feelings, and, you know, to be like Christ is really to suffer along with him and suffer along with all of us, because we're all going to be suffering at some point.
Yeah, I think that makes it really helpful to define the words the way that you're mentioning. And I think that definitely adds a whole other layer. And I think, does that help a bit, you know, with you also? With the question that you had raised before. Yeah, not just that pity, the Band-Aid that you mentioned. Thanks, that's good.
Hi, you were talking before about how people used to get together and try to remember details, but now they just go to Google. If you can resist going to Google, it can boost your cognitive. It's a little off the side, but the therapy technique is called circumlocution, where even though you can't recall it, resist going to Google, force your brain, wait, keep thinking about it, and it just will benefit you. Remember, we all used to know phone numbers? It's scary, people. Try to remember on your own. I just wanted to say that and put that out there. Okay.
Little neuroscience for us. Well, yeah, what if the computers ever crashed? We'd be totally lost. If the cloud ever got destroyed. Do we have a minute? Does anyone walk around the neighborhood? Their neighborhood? Wow, sound really like I'm from Queens. Anyone walk around their neighborhood at all this week? And you had any experience with that? Anything show up that you were surprised with? Yep. We'll do two more, and then we'll call it a day. Get some apples.
We actually didn't get to do that this week because we had a house guest. And it's somebody that we haven't seen in about 7 years, used to be our neighbor, moved out of the area. So the neighborhood, in essence, came to us. And it was just a really interesting time to reconnect with somebody that we haven't seen in a long time. And in a sense, to minister to her and to her needs and what was going on in her life. So that's sort of what happened to us this week.
So it happens when you're open, that things just sort of come your way. And that's definitely a blessing, I'm sure, for her.
So I wasn't here for last week, the assignment, but we did a walk around the yard. And it was funny because the day we picked, all of the insects happened to be out and all the birds. And going back to what you were saying about the seasons, there are seasons where everything is a little bit more intense and rushed. And we see the animal life in and outside of our home around just picking things up. And, you know, the groundhog that we have in our backyard, she has her babies there. She's eating like crazy every day. She's out every day again. And they're kind of like in this little hurry to patiently await their time of rest where they don't have to do much of anything. And I think about us and what you were saying. I got to observe that for like 10 minutes. And it was awesome because it's right. If you look around you, there's so much life and there's so much of the principles that God put in place for us happening simultaneously along our lives, that they intentionally create the space every year to do the same thing every year, to go through it every year. And it's like this routine thing where you constantly see the creation of space and patience playing out in front of you. So I thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, we can learn a lot from the animal kingdom. They have something to teach us. I love that. It's when you're open to it, everything can teach you something. And it's if we slow down, observe, watch, and then open our hearts to it, then I think that's when Spirit speaks. So that's awesome. I like it. Cool. All right, hey, let me pray, and we'll wrap it up. So God, thank you again for your grace. God, I thank you for this fruit of the Spirit of patience, of forbearance. And God, I just ask that you would continue to shape us in a particular direction. God, that we would be people who would be open to the journey that's before us. God, that we would be able to be people who offer grace to ourselves, to others. God, I pray that we would see your love, God, your presence with us through every step, God, even through our imperfections. And I ask, God, that as we move forward together as a community, that we would continue being shaped as people of compassion, people who come alongside others in this community, in our own communities, people who would sit with others through all the challenges and the struggles in life that they face. So continue to give us the heart of Christ. For ourselves and for our neighbors. We pray this in the name of Jesus. Amen.